tomorrow brings. We should enjoy every day and eat it like a fruit. If that's the case, I want my days to taste like peaches. She wiggles an eyebrow. You should eat a banana. I laugh. You're going to be a very bad influence on me. I might be, but you won't regret great sex. Seriously, have you ever regretted great sex? I set my glass down. It's been so long since I've had it, I'm not sure I remember enough to regret. That saddens me so much, I need another glass, she says, grabbing the bottle and offering me some. I wave her off. I shouldn't have any more. I glance at the time. I need to take off. I have to meet Griffin for ice cream. Where? Bertillon? I smile. How did you know? It's only the best in Paris. He probably wants to feed you ice cream and get you in bed. Is that a thing here? Ice cream and sex? She nods sagely. Like I said, we love our pleasures in France. I point at her. Your trouble, Elise. Total trouble. She smiles. Of course I am. Maybe you need trouble. Maybe you've spent the last few years doing what you thought you should, and now it's time to do what you want. I blink and square my shoulders, surprised she can read me so easily. How can you tell? I can see it in your eyes. I take a beat before I answer. You might be right. When I leave, I can't help but wonder how right she is, if I should pursue more. I know rationally it would be a mistake, but with all this champagne and perfume in my head, everything feels possible.
Chapter 12. Griffin. We're friends. Friends go out for ice cream. Friends stroll along the narrow streets in the little island in the middle of the river. One friend could stare at another friend as she licks her ice cream like it's a fucking blowjob. Whoa, rewind. That's not what friends do. Friends don't picture talents with tongues. But for a moment, I don't bother trying to trick my mind into being merely mates with joy. Her tongue strokes across the raspberry ice cream with such lavish attention that I can't think of anything but filthy thoughts. When her lips kiss the scoop, I nearly groan with lust. She exudes sensuality, and she smells divine. I swear, every time I'm with her, a different scent trails in her wake. I have no clue what it is, but today she reminds me of a lush waterfall, and I picture tugging her under it and kissing the hell out of those raspberry lips as the sun warms our skin. So yeah, it isn't easy trying to be friends with a girl you want to shag. I swear I can hear Ethan laughing at me. Good luck with that one, he'd say with a wink. Oddly enough, I crack a smile at the imagined retort, laughing softly as we meander past a cafe where waiters prep for the oncoming dinner rush. Joy tilts her head to the side, curious. What's so funny? Do I have ice cream on my nose? My finger makes the most of the opportunity as I brush it along the tip of her nose. All gone now? Seriously? I shake my head and take another lick of my coconut ice cream. I was just teasing about the ice cream. Truth be told, I was thinking of something funny. Are you going to share? Or will you keep all your comedy a secret? Just something I imagine my brother saying. She arches a brow. Is he a funny guy? My heart squeezes as if I'm being strangled. It's not that I don't want to tell Joy. It's just that I don't want to ruin this day. A part of me feels guilty for thinking that, but I also know once we open the Pandora's box of heartbreak, my brother lost the use of his legs, most of his arms, and he lived like that for 3 years before dying in the hospital while trying to fight off an infection. I miss him like crazy, and now I try to live out all the dreams he was never able to realize. Conversation. We'll be venturing into deeper, darker waters. I want to stay in the shallow end and eat ice cream. I say, he was, in my head, before I finish the sentence aloud with, very funny. I change gears. Now that you're enjoying the best ice cream in Paris, do you want to hear all about this island's role in French history? I sweep my hand out grandly to encompass all of Île de la Cité.
Oh, are you going to regale me with tales of Héloïse and Abélard, of the former royal residence turned into a prison during the French Revolution? Or will you show me the statue of Henri IV, because for some reason that's greatly important?
My eyes widen as I glance at her. Such sarcasm, I'm ridiculously impressed. I had no idea you had such a store in you. She wiggles her eyebrows.
I think it might be the champagne I had at Elise's.
I can't believe you didn't save any champagne for me, I tease.
Do you like champagne?
I whisper conspiratorially.
Love it. Maybe even more than a pint. Don't tell a soul.
She places one finger on her lips, sealing our little secret. Then she gestures to the buildings and the streets.
Truth be told, I don't mind those historical details. I've studied guidebooks about Paris, I've read about Héloïse and Abélard, and I think if some romance writer wants to pen a completely taboo story, she ought to do a modern retelling of a nun falling for a man. Now that would be risque.
I hold my free hand up high, as if I'm lighting up a marquee. The Vixen Nun. I can see it now. Starring Blaise Dalton as the modern-day monk. I've been meaning to tell you that Blaise also moonlights as an actor.
Naturally.
She brings the ice cream to her mouth once again and hums her approval after a long, lingering lick. With the strength of an army, I tear my gaze away. So, you don't like traditional tour guide info?
Oh, I do like it, actually, but I like the odd little tidbits even more. In fact, I already went to Notre Dame, but my favorite was the elephant.
I bring my hand to my heart.
The elephant. Seriously, you need to stop talking right now.
Why?
If you say anything more, I'll think you're perfect.
She scoffs.
Because I liked an elephant?
No, because you noticed the elephant. Joy shrugs as we amble down a cobbled street so picturesque it could be in a movie. Planters hang from window shutters, and an old-fashioned ironwork sign perches above an antique shop. Ivy has had the courtesy to crawl across nearly every building wall.
I like learning about what's right in front of me, but also what's undiscovered. However, I suspect you prefer the latter. Why don't you show me something on the Île de la Cité that I won't find on every single walking tour. Like that one.
Lowering her voice, she tips her forehead across the street. A man wearing trousers and a short-sleeved white shirt walks backward, talking animatedly to a group of a dozen or so tourists, all snapping pics on mobile phones or cameras, as he tells them a story of how Marie Antoinette served time as a prisoner in the conciergerie.
Nothing wrong with history. I love it, but I also love what's not in the books.
Evidently, Joy does too, and this little discovery is like a burst of electricity in my chest. I'm buzzing with awareness and possibility because it feels like she knows me, like she's speaking the language of my heart. I'll show you something that people rarely see. We finish our cones as we stroll past a cafe with a chalkboard menu and mint green chairs placed on the sidewalk. Joy stops to take a photo, then she studies it on her phone. She lifts her eyes and tugs the fabric of my shirt.
Look,
she points to the awning. I study it briefly, finding nothing noteworthy.
It's a red awning. Is this another pink door for you?
No, silly, look higher. There's an angel carved into the stone above the awning. I squint, finding it.
a small little fellow with wings at a bugle, occupying no more than 6 or 7 inches. Once more, Joy takes a photo. I saw an angel my first day here, but that was on a door knocker. So random. I love how completely random this is. I've never noticed it before. Nor have I seen any angel door knockers, I say, scratching my jaw. Maybe there are angels watching over the city, she muses. I arch a skeptical brow. You don't seem like one of those angels are watching over us people, I say as we resume our pace. I'm not really. As a scientist, I'd be more apt to think the planets were watching us, but some people do believe in angels, and I like knowing what people believe because it helps me understand the world better. And now I shall post that chubby little dude on Instagram, she says with a flourish, raising her arm, then stabbing her finger against the phone with panache. Hashtag their eyes are everywhere. She adopts a spooky laugh. Beware of angels, I intone, my voice going dark too. We make our way to the edge of the island, to the royal palace that became a court and a one-time prison. There, I show Joy one of my favourite gems, situated on an obscure side of the conciergerie. But I don't even need to direct her to see it. She's the rare person who looks up long enough and high enough to see what's in front of her. An ornate gilt medieval clock, lavishly decorated in gold and set against a royal blue background, the twin statues of law and justice framing the timepiece. I gesture to it. This is the city's first public clock, and its oldest public clock, given by Charles V to the city of Paris in 1371. But it's hardly included on tours, even though it mattered so much more to French people than a statue of a king. Why did it matter so much? Because before 1371, Parisians were pretty much wandering around wondering what the hell time it was, I say with a chuckle. She laughs too. See? I like those details. Tell me more. Why didn't anyone know the time? No one could afford their own clocks. And watches hadn't been invented. A big public clock like this helped the citizens know when the baker, the butcher, or the tailor opened and closed. Joy shakes her head in amazement. We take so much for granted. And before then, there were only sundials. But then, you don't know what the time is when it's cloudy, she adds. That's the rub. Her brow knits, and then she snaps her fingers. I swore I saw one the day we found my apartment. I'm not even sure it was working. The city is full of sundials, too. Some are useless and don't work. Some still tell the time in the most ancient of ways. It's a little known fact that Paris is the French city with the greatest number of sundials. There are about 120 around the city. Why so many? I'm sure there's a logical reason, like scientific societies met here or were studying the stars, but I have my own theory. Yes, do tell. We're obsessed with time, I say seriously. Then I train my gaze on the golden arrow ticking its way around the seconds. Not just Parisians. It's part of being human. We waste time, and we want more of it simultaneously. And yet, we rarely spend it wisely. We often simply squander it. Her thoughtful tone hooks into me. All these ideas I marinate on, she already knows the answers to. I think we're searching for lost time. We don't ever find it, but that doesn't stop us from hunting for all our lost hours. Maybe that's why there are so many sundials, I speculate. Maybe the French knew sooner than anyone else that we would always be seeking more time. There is literally never enough. For a quiet moment, we stand in front of the clock, as its hands tick forever forward. What I love most about these little curiosities is picturing everyday life in this city. Like when the baker is open. Which reminds me how glad I am to be alive today. I love knowing the time. I love knowing thoroughly modern details that Google tells me, like, what's the nearest boulangerie that's still open?
I smile at her and translate her question into French. Then I point at her purse. Now ask Google.
She nibbles the corner of her lip, but does as told, taking out her phone and speaking the question into the search engine as I repeat the words in a low voice for her. She's stilted as she speaks, and her pronunciation is nothing to write home about, but it gets the job done, because the pleasantly robotic voice answers from her phone in French.
The nearest boulangerie is on the corner of Rue de Lutèce and is open until 6.
Joy thrusts the phone in the air, victory style.
Très bien,
I tell her. When she tucks her phone away, she says, whenever I hear the time, though, it reminds me that I still feel sort of lost in time, like when I first came here.
How so?
From jet lag at first, but also there was this constantly hazy feeling of being neither here nor there. I'd left America, but I didn't feel truly here either, but caught some place in between. Was I 7 hours ahead or 7 hours behind? Even though I'm acclimated now, I hardly feel like I'm grounded here in Paris.
You're still converting the hours back to US time.
She nods, and a sad look passes over her eyes.
Maybe I always will.
No, it's not a bad thing. Your family is there. Your point zero is the United States, and all your references are across an ocean.
But I'm here, she says, her pitch rising as she digs her heels in. And I want to feel like I belong.
My eyes roam her body, her silhouette framed by the river behind her. Her red hair blows in the breeze. She is an oddity, a bold, bright, brash American woman in this European place that's both ancient and thoroughly modern. Paris is full of curiosities, and I'm pretty sure she's one of them.
I think you belong here,
I tell her with a warm smile. Her eyes light up, glittering. As I look into them, it occurs to me they're a colour I've never seen before. The green is vibrant, but not overwhelming. Those are not emerald eyes. That would feel unreal, like a template for fake contacts. Hers are a sage green, and I can't look away. I swallow as if I can drink down this flare of desire I feel for her that's physical but also something more. There's some fine thread connecting us, though I don't know what it is. I'm not sure how to name it. Or if I want to. All I know is I like it. Too much for my own good. I can show you all the sundials I know of, I say. And the words come out like gravel. I clear my throat. Fuck, it sounds like I invited her to bed. Maybe that's what I meant to do.
I would love that, she says, tapping my arm.
She squeezes my bicep.
But I'm going to need to teach you something. It's not fair that you're doing all the work.
It's not work. It's all pleasure.
Especially with her hand on my arm. Be that as it may, I will have to take my turn showing you something you might not know about this city. Like exploring the flower markets?
I'd pretty much say yes to any place she wanted to take me right now.
You smell like a flower. Like some tropical plant, I blurt out.
Taking her hand from my arm, she runs it down her neck.
I want that hand to be my tongue. It's a new perfume. Do you want to smell me?
I nearly wobble in my shoes.
I want to smell her, taste her, touch her. I want to lick her from her ankles to her thighs. I want to press my lips to the hollow of her throat.
I do, I rasp out. She lifts her chin and gently taps the side of her neck. I dip my head towards the crook of her neck, bending until my nose is inches away from her bare flesh. The scent of lush gardens floats into my nose as I close my eyes and draw a deep breath. My skin heats and my bones hum, my nerve endings snap to attention. along with other parts. My nose brushes against her skin, and a quiet noise seems to escape her throat, a hitch in her breath. As I draw one more delicious inhale, that sound shifts to a murmur, and I can picture her wrapping her hands around the back of my head, yanking me close and urging me to lavish attention all over her neck, up to her ear, then to those lips I don't want to resist. But I do resist. I step away. It's getting late. I believe you still have scissors and a laundry drying rack to procure. And I thought you were an expert errand avoider. It's a top skill of mine, but I can't wait to hear you ask for scissors in French. She blinks. I have to perform in French for you? I laugh. Yes. Hop to it. She's not half bad at the store when I teach her how to ask for the items she needs. Once we leave, she fixes me with a serious stare. I really owe you after all you've done for me today. I shake my head. You showed me something I've never seen before. That's pretty impressive. She scoffs. Spotting one little angel statue hardly compares to you treating me to ice cream, a clock, and your astonishing switcheroo skills when it comes to words. I don't agree. I think we're even. Hardly, she says, doubtful. Look at it this way. You kept me company on a Sunday afternoon when I might otherwise have been tempted to do something dreadfully boring, like dishes. If you say so. By the way, what is that tropical flower you smell like? My nose is terrible, I can't distinguish scents at all. Was it a flower? A flirty little smile crosses her lips. Or was it the scent of the Sunday afternoon when you devoured ice cream and wandered through the city until the clock ticked close to twilight, and your companion wondered how she could ever thank you? My throat goes dry. My skin heats. This woman. We stop at a street corner along the Seine. I step closer to her, savoring the view of her pretty face for one last moment. A street lamp glows softly behind her, a halo of light framing her copper hair. If you insist, I'm sure you'll find a way to repay me somehow, I say. Then I do what the French do. I kiss her right cheek, then her left, catching one final inhale of today. Then I say goodbye. The truth is, she doesn't owe me a thing. As I walk home, I let my mind replay the afternoon with her. Someday, when I'm searching for lost hours, these are the ones I'll want to find.
Chapter 13. Joy. What time does the nearest cheese shop close? I pose the question to Google in French as I near my office building on Thursday of that same week. Like a responsive robot, she answers me. The nearest cheese shop is on Rue Claire, and it closes at 5. Tra-la-la! I'm learning French by osmosis. I've been picking it up and not even realizing it. And now look at me, owning the cheese deets. Paris, I've got you figured out. With my phone close to my mouth like it's a mic, I chat more with Google until I reach the entryway to L'Artisan Cosmétique, where I tuck my handy-dandy new friend into the side pocket of my Kate Spade bag. Before I know it, I'll be conversing with my colleagues in the elevators, in the halls, in the break room, all thanks to this magical, fantastic device known as a smartphone. Smart indeed. Heck, I probably won't need Griffin soon. And that'll honestly be for the best. That man is temptation made flesh. It's not just that he's handsome. It's not only that his accent makes me want to hump his leg. It's that he's so damn attentive. He listens to me. He cares. And he does it in a way that goes beyond his responsibility as a translator. He does it as a friend. But even though I wanted to haul his fine body against mine when he drew his nose along my neck the other day, I resisted. Relationships are messy stews. They boil over, and then you're left cleaning up a big old spill of something you don't even want anymore. Besides, getting close to someone makes you lose sight of what you want in life. I'm so damn lucky that I have this chance to focus on my career, and I don't want to torpedo it by letting a little thing like lust overwhelm me. Whoever said you can have your cake and eat it too clearly was never involved with a man like Richard. I shudder at the mere thought of his name, then steer my brain toward happier ground. Like chocolate tarts and that fantastic new pair of royal blue wedge heels I picked up yesterday on sale at the shop on the corner. They look fabulous with the red skirt I'm wearing today, if I do say so myself. I head inside my building and press the button for the elevator, letting thoughts of flirty British men and inconvenient American men and my own mistakes in staying too long fall out of my head, like leaves fluttering to the ground. When I reach my floor, I find Griffin chatting with Marisol, and a flare of jealousy ignites in my chest. I stop in my tracks, trying to process why on earth I'd feel envy. He's effectively a contractor with our company. She's signing off on the checks to pay him. It's only natural they'd chat. I'm sure it's a simple conversation about work forms or payday. When I reach them, I say hello, and they both shift to English, which pisses me off for some odd reason. "Good morning, Joy," Marisol says. "We were chatting about how awful running can be." I furrow my brow. They're supposed to be discussing paperwork.
"I'm training for a marathon," Griffin says, a frustrated look in his pretty blue eyes. "Had a brutal run this morning, the kind where I ask myself why the hell I'm doing it."
I didn't know he was running a marathon. Marisol sighs heavily, chiming in. "It was the same for me. I'm a runner too, and it was just one of those days." The flare inside me burns brighter, turns hotter. It scalds my skin. I hate running so much, and I hate that Griffin is bonding with my HR manager even more. And the thing I detest the most is that I'm having this kind of incendiary reaction to them having a conversation. "Well, you should take up people watching. That's my favorite form of exercise, right after shopping," I say with a practiced smile. And it's only when I stroll toward my office that I realize the words came out more haughtily than I intended. Or perhaps just as haughtily as I intended. Ugh, I suck. I drop my forehead onto my desk.
"You okay?"
I raise my head at the sound of Griffin's voice. He stands in the office doorway studying me. I offer another smile, hoping it's more authentic than the last one. "Fabulous. Ready to tackle the day. Since, you know, I didn't run this morning." Oops, I went there again. He lifts an eyebrow.
"Is something about running bothering you?"
"What? No, why would that bother me?" I glance at the clock. "Meeting time!" When in doubt about your bizarre emotional reaction to something, practice avoidance. Fortunately, the meeting provides the perfect opportunity to do precisely that. In the conference room, we discuss time to market for the new body spray, and then we brainstorm product plans for our lavender lotion. Next on the agenda is our wish list of items. That excites me, as developing new products is a true passion, especially when Griffin translates and tells me they want to explore making perfume. My ears prick with excitement, and my heart pounds faster with possibility. I sit straighter as I ask questions about what they might want, scribbling down ideas in my notebook as quickly as I can. By the time the meeting ends, my brain hurts again from trying to comprehend what they said before Griffin translated for me. And failing. I need him so badly, and today it's ticking me off because I don't want to feel jealousy. I don't want to feel longing. I don't want to kiss him so damn badly it's like a persistent ache in my chest. I want to be friends. Just friends.
I need to put myself in a time out and try to sort through the barrage of emotions I didn't expect this morning. Naturally, I retreat to the ladies' room. Once inside, I take out my phone and check my messages. My sister replied to my email that had my Montmartre caricature attached to it. Allison. Oh my! Never has a likeness of you and your big mouth been so accurate. Also, love you madly and miss you much. That brings me a smile and makes my heart hurt the slightest bit. Understanding my sister is so easy, but understanding everyone here is so hard. I'm more homesick for English than I want to be. But I'm not going to be visiting that familiar place anytime soon. That afternoon, I sequester myself in the lab with blotters and vials and tubes. Griffin is gone, as he usually is at this time. Off, running or doing written translations, or meeting beautiful French women who run, or having sex with trim French women who whisper dirty French things in his ear. Gritting my teeth, I reach for a tube of synthetic orange blossom molecules. Nearby, Charles is working quietly, too. I swing my gaze back to my own work, wishing I felt comfortable casually asking him what he's working on, bantering about the day, gabbing as we test formulations.
Hey there, Chuck. What's shaking? How's the body lotion formulation going? Does it smell amazeballs?
Oh, yes, it's fantastic. Want a sniff?
Why, thank you. Oh my, that is wonderful. You're so talented.
I followed the process you outlined in the meeting last week, and yes, I think the process is amazeballs too.
Yeah, that conversation doesn't happen, even though I make a mental note to look up the correct translation of amazeballs later. Clearly, such a critical word in English must have a French equivalent. But I can't say any of that, so I offer a professional smile and return to my work. Today, I'm fine-tuning a formulation for a body lotion. It's close, but not quite there. It needs that final top note. Something that makes customers want it. Something that makes them think of their happiest moments. Orange Blossom isn't cutting it. It's too close to a cleaner in this blend. Closing my eyes, I try to picture all my favorite days, but my memory isn't cooperating. Unpleasantness intrudes. Images of Richard calling me the day he fell from the ladder, telling me he injured his back and was being taken to the hospital. My shoulders curl inward, tensing. I'd been ready to break up with him before that fateful call. I'd known I wasn't in love with him anymore. But how do you break a man's heart the same day he breaks his back? You don't. You woman up. You stay, you help, you do everything you can. Until you can't do any more. When I open my eyes, I try to will away the unpleasant images. I can't brew the scent of guilt. I can't bottle our antiseptic relationship. As I stare at the white-tiled walls of the lab, I cycle through some of the most pleasing scents. Vanilla and jasmine. Honey and rose. Peach and apple. You can't go wrong with peach. It's like bread. It's like puppies. It's impossible to dislike the scent of peach. But I can't find the vial I need when I search for it on the shelves. Sighing, I grab my phone, double-checking the words on Google Translate. Do you have the peach? I ask Charles in French, adding the dilution amount. His eyes light up.
Yes.
He rises, reaches for the tube, and hands it to me. Thank you. But when I mix it up, the scent is too strong, too intense. And I know why. I asked for the wrong variation, because my pronunciation is as good as a garbage can.
Do you like it?
He asks me in his native language. A little, I tell him. It's a lie. I can't stand it. Mostly, I can't stand myself. When I leave work that night, I take out my phone and curse it. You're only good for bakery information. The phone beeps. I can give you bakery information, the robotic woman answers. I curse at her. I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Ugh.
I did not understand you, Can you try again? I bark into the phone. Where is the nearest bakery that's still open? I desperately need a peach tart. I'm sorry, there is no bakery open. I imagine she adds with a snicker, "You pathetic idiot." I go home, wishing for a tart, but needing so much more. I head to my rooftop and text my sister. Joy. What's shaking, sugar? Her reply is swift. Allison. Can't talk. At work. Skype later? Ooh la la. But later I'll be asleep, and once again I'm lost in time, stuck between two worlds. I don't exist in my old world any longer, and I don't fit into the new one. Once upon a time I thought it would be easy to escape into a new life. But there's nothing simple about starting over. I write back to Allison saying we'll talk another time. As I close her message, I find a text from Richard that came through earlier in the day. You were wrong. I'm not addicted. My new doctor says my previous doc didn't know how to manage the pain. Hope you're having fun in France. Seething, I narrow my eyes and stare daggers at my phone, then shout at it, I'm not having fun. Not today, not at all. And you're wrong, you ass. You're fucking wrong. Gripping the phone harder, I consider chucking it, tossing it far across the rooftops of Paris for the crime of delivering Richard's message to me, as well as tricking me into thinking a search engine could solve my language woes. But that would be cruelty to my smartphone, and my phone has, bakery misunderstanding aside, been pretty good to me. I set it on the chair. Then I tromp downstairs to my bedroom, marching to my silver tray with my favorite scents. I snatch up a little tester tube of Obsession and spritz it on my wrist. Next, I grab Angel, with its chocolate and caramel notes, and spray some on my other hand. Like a dog sniffing for food, I hold my nose up high and let the mixture of scents feed my olfactory senses. If Richard were here, he'd cough majestically, dramatically even, and tell me my perfume gave him a headache. He'd fling his hand on his forehead as if to prove his point. That wasn't why I wanted to end our relationship, but it was one more Jenga block in a teetering tower. A tower that came crashing down. Tonight, I celebrate my freedom from him by dousing myself in all the scents he abhorred. By the time I'm done, I smell like a 10-cent whorehouse. I cackle as I twirl in my bedroom. Yep, I'm a regular mess right now. But I don't care. I don't care. I don't stinking care. I do a little jig. I can finally do whatever I want in my own sweet time in my own dang home. But admittedly, the scent of me right now is a wee bit overwhelming. So I hop into the shower, wash myself clean, and pull on yoga pants and a sweater. I return to my new favorite place, sinking back into the chaise lounge on my rooftop garden. With a cooler head, I grab my phone, delete Richard's message, then go to his contact information. My thumb hovers over his name. I could delete him, too. I could even block him. Instead, I resolve to ignore him if I hear from him. After all, there's nothing I can do for him anymore. I put down the phone and stare at the twinkling lights glittering on the Eiffel Tower. I gaze at them until they turn hazy and blurry. I might have moved on from my past. I might be letting go of a relationship I stayed in far beyond its expiration point. But I haven't fully stepped into my new life. And I know why. The answer doesn't reside in Google. It can be found in those lights. In where they flicker, in what they represent. I text Griffin and tell him I have a proposition for him.
Chapter 14. Griffin. There's one word a woman can utter that gets a man's blood flowing south instantly. Okay, that's not true. There are about 20,000 that produce that effect, because when you fancy a woman, nearly anything remotely sexy can drive you crazy with desire for her. Imagine if she says, I'm going to take off a sock,
Boom. Implied nudity, hard as rock. Perhaps she asks, do you like strawberries? Obviously that means she wants me to eat them off her breasts, flagpole raised. But then there are some that are so direct, so spot on, she might as well be saying, I'd like you to fuck me hard all night long. Which, for the record, might possibly be my favourite thing a woman could ever say to me. In fact, I might need to make that my own personal addendum to the bucket list. At the moment, though, the word is proposition. As I walk to the restaurant Joy has chosen on Rue de Bac, I keep replaying that deliciously inviting message. I have a proposition for you. What could it possibly be but some fantastic arrangement where we shag all night and still get along for work? No strings, no pain, no heartbreak. Sign me up right the hell now. That would be fantastic. A promise of orgasm-drenched nights capped off by an uncomplicated goodbye when I take off for Indonesia in a few more months. Finally visiting the places around the world Ethan and I marked on a map when we were younger. As I round the corner, Christian's words have the temerity to appear in the forefront of my brain. Don't make the same mistake. You can't mix business and pleasure. We're lucky to have the jobs we have. We are lucky to have our jobs. I don't disagree with his basic premise, but I doubt Joy's proposition will jeopardize mine. Besides, I really only need to keep my job for the next 2.5 months. That's all she needs me for at her company, and then I'm gone. Who knows where I'll end up after I take off on my great adventure? We made so many marks on that map. If I found it, it'd be full of pinholes, I'm sure. Travel everywhere, Ethan wrote. He can't. So I must. There's simply no way that Joy's have hot sex with me every single night starting now will interfere with my bigger plans. I can juggle business and pleasure. I can enjoy the woman, the gig, and the checking off of each item on the bucket list. When I reached the door of Gabrielle's, a restaurant started by a French-Brazilian cook who's now become a rock star chef in New York City, I'm more certain than ever that I can have my cake and eat it too, preferably off Joy's soft, supple belly. With that enticing image front and center, I smooth a hand down my black shirt, push open the door, and head inside. She lifts her glass of wine in an elegant hand, and all I can think is the proposition is coming now. She's going to hit me with her take me to bed and do very bad things to me offer this second. She's been cagey and she's been coy, insisting we order drinks first, then appetizers. What an alluring vixen. In return, I'm going to have so much fun torturing her exquisitely in bed, driving her wild, touching her everywhere, putting my mouth all over that enticing body. I raise my glass and tip it to hers, clinking. My eyes drift to her hands, picturing how inviting they'll look above her head as she writhes on the bed. She takes a sip. And I can't stop looking at those lips now. Those red, pouty, full lips I've wanted to get to know since the day I met her. Oh yes, I'm going to get my wish. She murmurs, this wine is so good. I take a drink too. It's fantastic. She runs her finger along the rim of the glass. I do love a good wine. My friend Elise says I should take more advantage of the pleasures Paris has to offer. You really should, I say, shifting an inch or two closer in my chair. The restaurant is small, and the tables are lit with low candles, shimmering faintly. Exposed brick walls give the eatery a cozy feel. The weather outside has turned chillier, as it often does in April. Maybe Joy is thinking I can warm her up. She arches an eyebrow playfully. You also think I should partake of all the pleasures? Wine, food, dessert? I think your friend Elise is brilliant, and I think you could even expand that list of pleasures. And what else should I put on my list? Maybe languages? I blink. That's not what she's supposed to say. Languages? She smiles big and wide. She sets down her glass and spreads her hands on the table. As I said, I have a proposition for you. Here it is. Yes. Hit me up. Obviously, it's the language of sex she wants me to teach her. The words and phrases that will take her straight to O-Town every night. Funnily enough, I'm pretty damn fluent in that language as well as the many others I speak. I'm conversant in many tongues. She laughs, tossing her head back, her throat long and inviting, her red hair curling in lush waves over her shoulders and down her chest, curtaining those fantastic breasts. I nearly growl with the realization that I will finally get properly acquainted with those beauties. You and your talent with tongues. She shakes her head, amused, then clears her throat. That's actually what I want to talk to you about. I was right. Fist pump. I've never answered an implied question faster in my life. Yes. The answer is yes. We can start tonight if you want. She furrows her brow. We can? Absolutely. After dinner. Really? You don't want to start, say, now? She asks, stammering a bit as if she didn't expect my response. I'm surprised too, since I didn't peg Joy as a get-it-on-at-a-restaurant kind of woman. But I pride myself on being flexible. I glance around the room, scanning for an opportunity. French bathrooms are notoriously tiny, but where there's a will, there's a way. I can make it work. Or maybe she has something else in mind. The tablecloths do afford some nice coverage. A little under-the-table manual fun. Count me in. Now works for me. Just so she knows I'm game for anything, I reach a hand under the table and gently stroke her knee. She flinches for a brief second. Then her eyes go hazy and she inhales sharply. Now for what? Whatever you want, I say, running my hand up her thigh. Her breath catches, and a faint pink flush runs up her neck. Jesus, she's so incredibly sexy. She's so responsive, and I'm going to get to play her beautiful body like an instrument. What I want, she says, as if she's mesmerized, like she can't form words because she's already so turned on. Anything you want. My fingers travel higher up her thigh, and her eyes flutter closed. Her breath seems to come in a rush. She swallows, then says in a bare whisper, I want. She doesn't finish. She lowers her hand under the table, and her fingertips graze against mine. Electricity surges in me, sparking through my veins. Lust vibrates everywhere as my dirty mind spins so many possibilities. Places, positions, times. How she'll look as a flush crawls up her chest, and she arches beneath me, losing control, letting go. I lace my fingers through hers with agonizing slowness, making it clear I'll savor her, make her feel so good. I clasp them around hers possessively, so she's keenly aware of how we'd come together. When our hands lock, she opens her eyes, and her hot gaze meets mine. Those green eyes of hers are flooded with lust, and a desire that matches mine. Have you decided what you want? The voice of the waiter snaps her focus from me. I look up at him, silently cursing him with my eyes. Joy snatches her hand away and sits tall. She fumbles with the menu, then orders the niçoise salad with salmon, and I choose a roast chicken dish. Very good. More wine for you? I nod. Another glass, please. Joy nods. He fills our glasses and leaves. I practically rub my palms together because we can return to the main attraction. But when I meet her gaze, her jaw is set, her focus dead on professional. Griffin, I need to learn to speak French. Will you teach me? I freeze. What the hell does she just say? My hand tightens around the stem of the wine glass. Excuse me? Her eyes widen, an apologetic look crossing them. That's what I wanted to talk to you about. That's why I asked you to dinner, she says quickly. And holy balls, she did proposition me. But it's not for sex. It's for words. I'd like to say my heart sinks, but it's another part that deflates, along with my ego, which has been massively punctured too. That's why? I ask cautiously, making sure I don't completely cock this up too. My proposition is that I'd like to pay you myself for you to spend more time with me, actually teaching me the language. So yeah, I basically felt her up under the table and she wants me to teach her how to say table, fingers, and hands instead. Foolishly, I thought I would learn the language simply by being here, she explains. I figured I'd pick it up the way young people do through TV or whatnot, except I hate television. I suppose I could find some French language school, but I thought maybe if you wanted to pick up any extra work or hours, I can pay you well. Her voice rises at the end of her explanation, almost as if she's embarrassed to be asking. Or maybe she's embarrassed that I came on so strong. But in my defense, she sure as hell did seem responsive under the table. I blow out a long stream of air, trying to reroute my errant, filthy thoughts. I reach for the glass of wine and take a hearty drink. I give myself another moment to adjust to the shift in plans and in my pants, for that matter, as well as the fact that I hit on her like a total wanker sidling up to a woman in a bar. She keeps going, hastily adding, "It's been a dream of mine to know another language. I took some French in school, but I didn't learn enough to do much more than order food. I can't get by in this country simply knowing how to say how much does that cost, and I'd like a salad, hold the ham," she stage whispers. "I hate ham." "That's understandable," I say absently, before it hits me like a whack upside the head. I've embarrassed her by coming on to her. Now she's chattering on and on because I've made her feel stupid. Time to fix this problem. "Ham is awful. Simply dreadful. You need to be able to converse about ham." I bang a fist on the table to emphasize this critical point and try to diffuse the discomfort. She smiles and laughs lightly. "Yes, exactly. I need to have conversations every day about ham or synthetic vanilla or when the next train is coming or what I'm doing this weekend or whatever else comes up," she says, sounding natural again, and I breathe a sigh of relief. Perhaps I haven't totally scared her off with my hand under the table routine. The routine she loved, the devil in me says. "Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Right? You get it? I know it'll take time, but I thought if you could help me and I could truly immerse myself in the language, then I can start to feel like I belong here. I can make the progress I want to make in my career, and I can potentially achieve one of my dreams, to speak another language." My spine straightens. All the noise in my head disappears as I key in on that word. Dream. An image of the sheet of paper I keep in my wallet snaps into crisp focus. 6. Help someone you care about achieve their dream. That item from Ethan's list has always been a tough one for me. I haven't been quite sure how to tackle it, so I've put it off. Now I know. Now I get it. This is how I fulfill that wish. This isn't Christian's satirical commitment to find a rich vixen. This is real. This matters to Joy. And this mattered to my brother. Yes, I say, clear and confident. She beams, her eyes sparkling, her smile stretching wide. You will? Under one condition, I add. Okay, she says curiously. You can't pay me.
What?
I swallow thickly and look her in the eyes. It's an item on my bucket list.
Are you sick?
Her tone is laced with concern. I shake my head and steel myself to tell her. No, it's my brother's list.
Is he ill?
He was. When you asked me about him the other day, and I said he's very funny, that wasn't entirely true. I take a breath, remembering Ethan toasting me when I landed the job at the aquarium several years ago, saying the job sounded great but a little fishy. I'd rolled my eyes, telling him to try again with a better pun. He never stopped the fish jokes, and I'd do nearly anything to hear another one. He was funny. He died more than a year ago.
I'm so sorry,
she says, her hand stretching across the table. She threads her fingers through mine, and I can tell I'm forgiven for my wayward action before. This isn't a prelude to seduction. It's the gesture of a friend. Perhaps I need that more at the moment. Maybe we both do. Yeah, me too. Sorry I didn't say anything the other day, I guess I should have, but... She shakes her head, dismissing the notion.
We only say things when we're ready. You weren't ready then.
Her response warms some cold, brittle part of me. The part that's been on ice for the last year. I think I just wanted to enjoy that day with you. I didn't want to bring anything sad into our Île de la Cité adventure. I take a breath, then dive into the deep end. He was in a car accident 4 years ago. Hit by a drunk driver and wound up in a wheelchair. Couldn't walk. Could barely use his hands. I helped take care of him, which is a really weird thing to say. That I took care of my adult brother.
Why is that weird?
Her voice is soft and her hand squeezes mine. You just don't expect to be in that position. Maybe I was Blaze Dalton in a way. A faint smile tugs at her pretty lips.
Were you?
I shake my head. Not really. He had carers or aides, as you call them, but, you know, they're not family. And we don't live in a castle or on an estate. We all helped. Mum, Dad, I shrug. What else can you do?
You can't do anything else.
She swallows roughly.
I'd do the same for my sister Allison. You just have to help.
I was getting ready to move to